Oh, and you look out for Spriggan and Banshee, my girl. These woods be thick with them. Stay clear of toadstool rings and willow trees and old oaks.
Greetings and well met, travelers. You have found your way to Dragonreel, a magical journey to the realm of fantasy movies.
Welcome back to the Dragonreel podcast. I'll be your host for this evening. My name is Chris, and sunlight is my destroyer. Did you catch that? I said sunlight is my destroyer, just in case you were wondering how this was going to end. In chair number two, she's spunky, she's charming, she's... Wait! Get your hands off my unicorn! It's
wait,
Sharon!
Don't you trust me?
Yes, I trust you.
Well, then, can I touch your unicorn?
So, in chair number three, be you a child of the forest and not know Pete?
I feel dirty. I feel very dirty. I didn't know the unicorn thing was going to go quite that way.
Sorry.
You know, if petting the unicorn is not the best euphemism for masturbation, I don't know.
No, it's not, guys. I was a little girl. Little girls love, and teenage girls love unicorns, and it doesn't always have to be, well, I mean, I'm just saying that it doesn't have to be.
It doesn't have to be about a huge amount of...
No, it's because we love horses. No, don't twist my words.
If I could break in here, I would like to remind the listeners that this is episode 18, and if you haven't figured it out yet, we are talking about the 1985 movie Legend. Wait for it. Nope, that was it. Just Legend.
No.
The 1985 movie with Tom Cruise as one of four human beings in the entire world.
It would be cool if there was a movie called Derry that came out just after it.
Yes.
That would have been awesome. Okay, anyway.
Your definition of awesome is probably at odds with my definition of awesome. Let's call that a bit over.
I recommend that people that like Tom Cruise should see this movie because... Oh my God!
That you won't like Tom Cruise.
No.
In fact,
just so young in this. Unbelievably so.
He really is adorable.
This is like the second or third movie he ever did. And honestly, I mean, we're going to get to this, but I really think anybody in the world could have been in any part in this movie. Like, they could have put anybody in Tom Cruise's part. They could have put anybody in as Lily, as Mia Sara's part.
I guess so, but I think there wouldn't have been the draw had there not been named people.
Not to disagree with you this early in the podcast, but you said that any other actor could have played any of the parts in this movie, and not Darkness. No.
Mm. I think Alice Playton's Blix was really fairly solid as well.
You mean Keith Richards?
Yeah, okay.
Sharon and I did not particularly enjoy watching the movie.
Well, I think I didn't because... So much of it was visual, and being a totally blind person, I mean, nice music, yes, but when you're blind and you're not getting the scenery described to you, you know, and when I watched the commentary, it was interesting to hear about the trees and the forest, that it was really magnificent. So, I mean, you guys could talk about the visual part, but I guess I don't recommend Legend for blind people.
Well, that's the curse of Ridley Scott. Ridley Scott shoots beautiful movies.
Yeah,
they're very visually satisfying.
For sighted folks, I mean, sounds.
So that's like I said, it's the curse.
Gorgeous.
And the thing about Legend is there are good things about Legend, but almost all of them are entirely visual.
True.
Like, there are some really great shots in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
There are some really great scenery in this movie, considering the fact that it's an indoor, you know, airplane hangar-sized soundstage.
And then on the commentary, they said there was a fire, too.
Yeah, they got about 80% of the way through with filming in the soundstage, and it burned down.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the thing about Legend is that the discussion surrounding the movie is really better than the movie itself.
That's sort of mean, Chris.
I mean, this came on the heels of Alien and Blade Runner, and then Legend happened. And then, he disappeared for a few years. For, 6 years before he came back with Thelma and Louise, and that was kind of a, you know, it wasn't really a Ridley Scott kind of movie, but there it was.
No, but again, it was completely a Ridley Scott movie because of how gorgeous it was to look at. It was a visually very satisfying movie.
Yeah, so I never saw Black Rain, and I don't even think I've heard of Someone to Watch Over Me.
I've seen both of those, actually.
Back to
Legend. Black Rain is Michael Douglas and Andy Garcia.
Okay. So after Legend, I'm sure Tony Scott said, I'm looking for somebody to be this new hotshot pilot that I'm going to film in my next movie. And Ridley said, well, I just absolutely wasted all of this talent in this guy named Tom Cruise. Why don't you use him?
No, you see, I don't think he wasted all this talent unless somebody named Tom Cruise. I think that at that point in time was right up Tom Cruise's alley.
I just think you could have put anybody in that part.
I just think you needed to have somebody who was willing to embrace the concept of it being a fairy tale more. You know, he had come off of All the Right Moves and Risky Business, mm-hmm. and then made this. So talk about being completely outside of the man's wheelhouse. You couldn't get any more. You know.
Yeah.
So
okay.
Well, I wonder if Tom Cruise likes fantasy stuff.
He must. He's a Scientologist.
Oh,
sing! Sorry.
App Scientology, take that.
Well, you're also saying that it could be anybody, and
Scientology report to the Burn Ward.
They needed a very handsome man. They needed somebody that could look like he was young and prince-like. And yeah.
Can you imagine this movie with, say, C. Thomas Howell in that part? Sure, why not?
No, not really, because C. Thomas Howell was doing, you know, the Outsiders and what was that?
Tom Cruise was also
in Outsiders. What was the cowboy one? Yeah, but Tom Cruise is not memorable in the Outsiders. C. Thomas Howell is.
I'm trying to think of who else was popular at this time. Can you picture Patrick Swayze in this? In fact,
no.
Can you picture anybody else from the cast of Outsiders in this?
How old was Brooke Shields?
Ralph Macchio, maybe if he would just lose the accent.
How old was Brooke Shields in 85?
I'm guessing she was probably around 15.
No. She had to be older than that.
She had to be older than that.
Because she was 14 when they did the Blue Lagoon, and that was like 81 or 82.
Okay, so in 85 she would have been 20.
Yeah.
She could have done that part.
The Tom Cruise part?
No.
I think she would have rocked at the Tom Cruise part.
I meant it
would have been a good 6 inches taller too.
I meant the female part.
Yeah, the Mia Sara part?
Yes.
Yeah, pretty much. So it's in the commentary, Ridley Scott talks a bit about like finding, you know, the perfect actress for this part, and really I think anybody could have been the perfect actress for this part. Maybe not, I don't know, Barbara Streisand or somebody, but you know, pretty much any young actress at the time could have been in this part.
Well, who can play very sweet and innocent and make it believable?
Ali Sheedy.
But then also turned around and I'm just being honest. I thought she did an excellent job being
evil. Oh, Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Sure.
But she's about the only one I could think of.
Leah Thompson.
No. Leah Thompson couldn't have pulled off this role. I'm sorry. I liked Leah Thompson. I generally do, but she couldn't have been Leah.
Yeah, Chris, I think you're being a little bit hard on the actors and actresses in this because, I'm going to disagree with you there and say that I don't know if anybody could play those parts. Because she did have to do the sweet and innocent, and then she had to do the... And she did a great job pretending to be evil.
I disagree with that.
Really?
Heartily.
Well, I disagree with that only because visually she didn't do it very well.
Like this right here?
I will stay here with you as you wish. But on one condition.
Anything.
I want to kill the unicorn.
Calm down there, Timmy.
Oh, okay.
He's like...
yeah, but he does it so well, like...
So, there is one part in here that there is only one person who could have played.
Okay.
You see, again, I disagree, because I don't think you could have gotten Johnny Depp to do the part at that point in time as well. I think he didn't come in...
I think Johnny Depp was a few years behind this. I think Johnny Depp came around in the early 90s.
No, Johnny Depp came around in the 80s. He was in Nightmare on Elm Street. And then he was...
Oh, you're right. You are right.
So, and he was considered for the role. But I don't think he could pull it off. I didn't think he really came into his acting own until around, like you said, the early 90s, like around Edward Scissorhands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 21 Jump Street is what put Johnny Depp out there.
I don't think Robert Downey Jr., who was also considered for it, could have pulled it off, because at that point in time, he was mostly doing kind of quirky comedic roles, like in Back to School, or he was playing the best friend in things like, what was that James Spader thing? Streets of something.
Streets of Fire?
No, it wasn't Streets of Fire. That was
the one with the Jim Steinman music?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'll have to think about it. I can't remember.
Okay. So of the people in here, there are only, like, four humans.
That you see. They reference other humans.
Right. And depending on which version you see, Lily may be referred to as a lady or a princess. Because in the American theatrical release, she's not called a princess until much later. And we're not sure if that's the actual sincere title or just, you know, what the person is using to describe her. Whereas in the director's cut, she is called a princess mm-hmm. as you're introduced to her.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
so
true.
In recording this, the sounds for this, I was only able to get the sounds for the American theatrical release. So I got this sound clip here, which I will play for you now.
Lily.
Okay.
I look on you as a daughter. If you'll pardon my saying it, it's time you start behaving like the lady you are.
Like the lady you are, and she doesn't call her princess
right.
there.
And in the, the version that we saw mm-hmm. together, that she said, like the princess you are.
Yes, that's true.
So that woman's voice is really badly dubbed, and it looks badly out of sync with her lips.
Mm.
Well, that's because she is dubbed. Tina Martin was dubbed.
Yes, badly.
Yes. Nobody ever said it was well. They just said it was dubbed.
Yes. So this movie did not do well. With a budget of $25 million, it only grossed about $15.5 million at the box office.
Domestically?
That's what it says for... Yes, domestic. Yes, you're correct.
Right. It did better overseas, from my understanding.
Okay.
I read some of the forums, so that's why I was...
Okay. And I remember being told that it was garbage when it came out. I didn't see it until it came out on VHS.
Oh, you see, I saw it in the theater, and okay. I have a very nice memory of that. So I think that influenced my choice, honestly.
Okay. We showed it to three children who were about the age that we were when it came out. And
the age you were when it came out.
Yeah. The review from one of them was, that was the most solidly mediocre movie I've ever seen.
Yeah, that was one of the three children fell asleep.
One fell asleep, and the other said, "I think the word okay was invented to describe this movie."
And I'd have to agree with them there because it is.
They didn't say it was horrible,
it's an okay
though.
Fantasy film,
right?
But it's not in any way, shape, or form a great one.
The mom of these kids, who's by the way also a fantasy person, said mm-hmm. what she remembered from the movie was the dress scene. You know, the whole ballet scene where she's getting seduced by the...
By darkness.
Well, but it's, you know, it's pretty much a ballet, and it's seducing her.
It's
into
a metaphor for sexual awakening.
The side of the dark side.
Which is funny. Oh, no, never mind.
I think. Well, yeah, but it's strange because also I would say that's what I remember from when I could see. I liked that scene. I liked the way they choreographed it, but... The other thing that I really remembered from this movie was the ending, which I love whenever the character, when darkness is on screen. Like, I just feel almost like it was two different movies, like when darkness was there.
Mm-hmm.
It
right.
was like, oh my God, just the way he looked, and they did a lot with, you know, his muscles and his costume.
Right, and
yeah, the prosthetics and the makeup are...
And that's kind of what I mean about everything good about this movie is visual. His makeup is fantastic,
right.
Considering they didn't have CGI, and they didn't
right.
have a lot of the technology that they have today. He looks amazing.
He really does. Like an evil Satan type of...
Yeah.
Right, he looks like darkness.
Yeah. Yes. Right. Yeah.
Yeah,
and he sounds like darkness, and that's why I was
they
saying
lowered his
Chris,
voice a little.
That they lowered and
well, they had to round it out also, yeah. So he had a more commanding, mm-hmm. booming voice rather than come up to the lab.
But
it was tough turf with James Spader in front.
Oh, okay.
I just blanked on his name, and I know
Curry.
Curry. I was going to say Tim Curry.
The reason we're doing this,
right? Yep, Tim Curry. I love him, and his voice is sensual and amazing. Without having it lowered, but mm-hmm. with them doing whatever they did, you know, with the audio, oh my God, it just makes you want to pee yourself. I mean, like if If you know what
I said that, but okay.
Well, I just mean, you know, scary. If I came home on a dark night and walked into the house and somebody said hello like that, yeah. You know, I'd freak. I'd pee myself.
The night's coming and wrap me in your dark embrace.
Yeah.
Was that in both versions?
No, that was only in the American version.
Yeah, this right here.
Mother,
so there are differences.
Night.
Oh.
Fold your dark arms about me.
That's what it is.
Protect me.
Oh, yeah.
In your black embrace.
Yeah, that's a good opening, but completely different from the director's cut.
Yes.
It's the director's cut.
Well, the European version, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's explaining to you about the sun being able to destroy him.
Right, so he says that in the beginning. He says, sunlight is my destroyer, and
sort
in the
like,
end he says it again.
Sort of like in the Lestat book, I'm just saying. That.
Yeah. Throwing that out there, that's not bad.
Yeah.
It's almost like he was framing the whole situation, I don't know.
Yeah, it's almost like they added that line in for
fire.
The director's cut because they forgot he said it later on. I could be wrong.
I'm not sure that they necessarily did that because, again, I think that it's, when you're writing a fairy tale,
mm-hmm.
which is what Ridley Scott attempted to do with, what was the other guy's name?
I forget his
Walter,
name.
William, somebody. You have to make a lot of decisions.
William Hjortsberg.
Thank you. You have to make a decision on where to place the target audience,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Sure.
Because, like you said, I mean, there were some, Ridley Scott had put out some great movies, and in 1985, there were a lot of movies. But not necessarily geared towards a younger audience at that time.
And this so. One was. They did say that on the screen. They did say
right.
that it was for younger kids.
So I think that part of the repetition is because they're trying to drive it home to an audience that might not have been paying attention the first time, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Or may have forgotten in the intro.
I mean, I wouldn't show this to 5-year-olds. Again, I'm always thinking about things like that. I mean, darkness is scary. Then again, kids today are different from kids in the 80s. And like we said, a 10-year-old fell asleep during it.
Right.
Actually, a 10-year-old who also likes fantasy
yeah.
movies.
So I think, so here's the thing. I have to ask this question because this is important. This is a very basic fairy tale.
Yes.
This is, you know, it's not really every single fairy tale distilled down, but it's kind of...
No, but it's a fairly straightforward concept.
Yeah. So why isn't... What doesn't work about this? What is failing in this movie that made it bomb so badly in the domestic box office and, you know,
well,
made it hard to watch sometimes?
I think the big thing was that it's not the original length. Neither of the cuts are the original length that Ridley Scott intended them to be, is the first thing.
Mm.
Because the first cut was 150 minutes long. It was two and a half hours long.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? It's 90 minutes domestic and then 100
it's about 2 hours.
10 minutes?
Yeah, it's close to 2 hours in the direct.
Right, so right. we're still not seeing the full version. We're still not seeing the whole story.
Yeah.
That's the first thing. I always felt like there were big parts missing when I watched it this time. I felt that there were big chunks missing.
Okay.
I think that also they needed to decide it on a narrative voice. And I think you see part of it as being Ridley Scott's narrative voice and the other part being, what was his name? Hjortsberg's vision. And they don't exactly mesh up.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that one of the things that you find in Ridley Scott films is that there are times when he sacrifices story for visual.
Yeah.
I think that
was my problem with
it. It's not a manga or a comic book where you can get away with that.
Okay.
You know, it's not a series of static things in which you are an active participant. When you're watching a movie, you're more of a passive participant. So.
Okay. Well, I also felt that Oz the Great and Powerful had a lot of great things that were mostly visual and, you know, fairly mediocre other than that, but still enjoyable. But Legend is...
Oh, okay. I think
different.
I have it. Yes.
Do it.
And let me tell you why. Because I think Oz has a lot within one story. There are a lot of things happening. I mean, you have characters developing, you have action, you have people going places, and I'm talking about Oz now. That
sure.
They're going to different places, they're doing different things, like there's love, there's romance, there's betrayal, there's dwarves, there's fighting, and
Munchkins, please, Munchkins.
Yes. wait, no, I meant actual, oh, sorry, Munchkins, yes. You know, there are the flying monkeys, I think that what Legend needed was more stuff happening. That's just my opinion.
Which, again, I think, like I said, I feel like there was a bunch of stuff missing. I think that if we'd seen the original 150-minute cut, we might be a little bit more satisfied overall with the story.
You know what I think my problem with the movie was?
I didn't believe
this existed in a world. It was so bottled up. There were so few real people in it. And, you know, the story was so linear.
Well, none of the characters... There are no rounded characters. They're all very flat characters.
Yeah.
You know, nobody develops.
Yeah.
Really. You know, even...
Well, Lily does develop,
Lily's contrition is forced, you know? It doesn't feel natural. It just feels like, oh, I screwed up. I have to do something about this.
Yeah.
Because people might not like me everybody always loved me before now.
Could be.
You know, it wasn't because I did wrong. It's because people won't like me. That's what it felt like to me.
It's hard to say that everything that goes wrong is her fault, because that's what they say. However, she didn't shoot the unicorn with a poison dart.
No.
She didn't cut the horn off. So how is it her fault?
Because if she hadn't touched the unicorn and made it docile, you know, gave it something to focus on other than its own safety, then it wouldn't have been able to be shot, which is why... who is it? Pox says to Blix, you know, it wasn't your arrow that took it down. It was the beauty that brought the beast to bay.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Yeah. Maybe if they could have... I'm just sort of imagining right now. But maybe if there could have been... Maybe if the princess could have been with somebody else in the beginning, somebody maybe telling her... You know, talking about the unicorns at some point and saying, you're going to be drawn to them and they're beautiful creatures, but you know you're not supposed to touch them. And I don't know, I'm just kind of thinking out loud.
I guess the point that they were trying to drive home that they didn't get across very well was that it was Lily's selfishness that kind of causes this whole thing, too.
Yeah,
because
maybe they could have played on that a little more.
She even says at one point to Jack, I only wanted to touch one.
Yes.
You know, it wasn't the fact that she cared about the sacredness of the bond with the unicorns in the universe or nature or whatever.
Right.
It was the fact that she wanted to touch one.
Yeah, yeah. She was a carefree, carefree kind of, I'm lovely and I'm going to interact with everything around me in this beautiful world, and I'm going to do what I want because I'm a beautiful princess.
Yeah, exactly. And that's...
But it wasn't.
But at the same time, that's a horrible thing because she doesn't know... Yeah. You know, nobody's ever sat there and said, no, you can't do that.
Right.
Right?
You know, so...
And as a result of that, something horrible
happens.
Not Puck.
The Gump!
Gump, yes.
Stop.
Sorry. He's Puck.
Can't you be a child of the forest and not know the Gump?
The Gump blames Jack for it,
right.
But then it's okay because he did it for... You know what? Here it is. Hold on.
Do you think you can upset the order of the universe and not pay the price?
We meant no wrong. Did it for Lily. Did it for love.
Love, you say? Well, love is another matter.
Oh, yes.
So it's like, let's be friends again.
Let me throw something in here, though.
Sure.
That's a very European fairy thing to do.
Uh-huh.
European fairies are intensely capricious. Fairy tales that have come from, especially Middle Europe, for literally centuries, have a flip-flop of emotion like that amongst the fairies.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
They're easily, you know, swayed one way or the other. In the version you couldn't get a sound bites for, there's this whole thing where Gump has to challenge Jack to a riddling, you know? mm-hmm. in order for him to, in order for Jack to live, quite frankly, you know?
Yeah.
And when it works out, then, you know, the fairies are like, yep, okay. We're fine with that. It's not a big deal. You know,
you gotta love them.
We're capricious, immortal beings. You cannot possibly understand us.
Yeah.
So.
I love that about Fae. And I think that's why I like reading books about the Fae, is because they're so different from human beings. They're not logical, and they're so long lived that
they're so problematic in this world that the washerwoman immediately assumes it was fairies that dropped her washing line.
Yes.
Well, yeah, but because they're real, it could have been fairies.
Well, not just that, but she and her husband live in she and her family live in the forest, for God's sakes. What were you thinking?
Yeah.
This is what you get for living in the forest. You're going to be pestered by the Fae.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who are tricky.
And there are ways to placate them. You leave out milk, you leave out whiskey, you leave out some bread. You know, everybody's happy.
And so Jack is a kind of fairy creature person. He may or may not be a human.
It's a tough call, but I think Jack is a human who was raised in the woods.
Uh-huh. It could be. They're
I think
not
that's,
real
that's the general feeling I get about it, which is why he doesn't wear pants.
Mm. Well, in the commentary...
Well, he doesn't wear pants, even when it's cold.
Sure. In the commentary or one of the extra materials, Ridley Scott said that he considered him a sort of something like a green man.
Oh, okay. The Jack in the Green, of course.
Yeah, the Jack in the Green. And he said at one point, he called the writer and he said, now what if Jack was green?
Yes.
working on the screenplay. Is like, okay, how are we going to explain to the viewers how that's why he's green and why he in particular is green and no one else is? And he goes, oh, you're right, that's a bad idea.
Visually spectacular.
He's wearing green clothes, right?
No, he's not. He's just wearing furs and stuff.
Oh, no, he's wearing green clothes.
Is he?
Okay. His clothes are green. Okay. Yeah. No, you're right, Sharon. He does wear green clothes. They're just a very dark green. Mm-hmm. And there are no pants. But he wears, like, furry boots.
Well, I think the movie definitely gets across that he's definitely can speak. He has this special ability with so many different types of creatures. And
which is why I kind of got that whole raised by wolves feel, the whole Lucan, you know, wild boy brought up by the forest, and so the forest recognizes him.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and he's respectful and kind and good and good, but also maybe with that touch of mischief running through his blood. Because it does give us the idea that he's kind of going against what he should be doing by taking Lily to see the unicorns.
Well, he knows it's wrong to take Lily to interact with the unicorns, but to see them, he doesn't see any harm in that.
Right.
And technically, he's right. There is no harm in that. If their unicorns aren't aware of them, and they don't mess with the unicorns, what could be the harm?
Right.
So,
because evil on the earth, evil can never harm the pure of heart.
So one thing about that quote is I'm thinking of this as I'm listening to it. That is the not Oingo Boingo. Who's the other people?
Oh, that's Tangerine Dream.
Tangerine Dream. That's the Tangerine Dream soundtrack that you were hearing in the background there, and
Jerry Goldsmith.
Not the Jerry Goldsmith score, which I think is superior, but I kind
of
so much better.
I think they're
both. Yeah, I think
good.
It's better too.
No, Tangerine Dream score bad.
I disagree.
I kind of like the Tangerine Dream score, but it really dates the movie. It really places
I would like
the
Tangerine Dream score better if it were in a different movie.
Yeah?
Now that's a score that could be in any other film, Chris.
You know, I'm going to agree with you there.
I think the other one was put me not the Tangerine Dream, but the other one.
Oh, the Goldsmith score is superior.
The Goldsmith one was so much more fantasy-esque. Can I make up that word for this podcast?
I don't think you made it up. I think it's been around.
Oh, really?
Okay. We call it fantastical.
There you go.
Yes. Magically delicious.
Oh, well, you were talking about the score. Sorry.
Yeah.
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 Common mistake, really.
So both of them are highly acclaimed scores in their own way, but I think for this movie, the Goldsmith one is better.
For those people that don't know, I don't know how many people watch Star Trek: The Next Generation, but it floored me when you told me that the Doctor from the Holodeck
is Meg Mucklebones.
Oh.
Yes, Robert Picardo.
Yes.
My goodness. I was just
seriously,
like...
Seriously, is there anything that man can't do? Because he right. does a lot of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
That, he's a very talented dude.
Here he is right here. Hang on.
Come to Meg, juicy boy.
That, okay, you get that part of the score is terrible. But
I think Juicy Boy should be your porn name, Chris.
It was.
Was it? Great.
No, Max Damage was my porn
name. Oh, there you go.
Oh, my God. So, so there's another person, Chris, that I want to say I thought he was very, very good in that role, and I'm glad that they had a man playing a woman,
so they
a
had
witch.
A man playing a hag, and they had
hag,
a woman
yes,
playing
hag.
The goblin.
Yeah,
yeah, I liked that
Blix.
Too.
God, I love Blix.
And
Blix is such a great minor character in this.
Do you have the darkest heart?
Blix, are you not the foulest of my goblins?
I did not
yes.
keep that one.
But, oh, you
but
did get that
keep
one?
This one. I did keep this
maybe
one.
Maybe innocent, maybe sweet, ain't half as nice as rotting meat.
So that.
Wow, that makes me want to vomit.
Sound, I think that was only in the American edit.
Oh, God.
But, so everything that Blix says rhymes, almost.
Yes.
I think he has a couple lines that don't rhyme, for no clear reason.
Okay.
Not sure why he has to rhyme everything. Is that just...
That's part of what makes him the foulest of all the goblins, of course.
Okay.
Like, you know, he's gross, yeah.
Yeah.
So, which, I liked but, the...
Oh, I gotta tell you.
I liked the scene with the fairy when she says that she can become anything that he desires. I don't know. I like that in fairy tales.
Oh, Una. When Una tries to tempt him.
Yes. Yeah.
And
yeah.
She does this.
I be anything you want me to be. Even your heart's desire. You've got to help us, Captain.
I gotta say I was a little bit ooked out by that because she looks about 12.
Brown chicken brown. Yet she's much older.
Yet she is much
that's
older.
Crazy.
Yeah. And Gump looks like he's about 12, but he's 20 in this.
Yeah, exactly.
The actor is 20.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise was 23, and I think he... I said Tom Cruise was 23.
Yes.
That's true.
And I think he looks younger.
No, he looks in his late teens in that one, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought, yes.
Yeah.
And
David Bennett, the guy who plays the Gump... has been in many German films that I've actually happened to see and enjoy, and it's so funny how ageless he is until he hits, like, age 40.
Yeah.
Then suddenly he becomes an adult. So.
He also is dubbed in this, because he has, this was from the commentary that we heard.
That's a very strong German accent.
Yes, he had a very bad German, a very, very strong German accent.
Still a very strong German accent, he's a very good actor.
That Ridley Scott liked, but did not test well with audiences. So they dubbed him after the test audience.
Yeah.
So
which is a pity, and it sounds almost like it's Al Splatton doing the Gump voice also.
I think it is.
Yeah.
Is she doing Blix's voice?
Yes.
Okay, I think she is also
doing...
That is definitely her
doing Blix's voice.
Okay, I think she's also doing the Gump's voice.
No.
It's right here.
Who are you?
You be a forest child. You cannot know the Gump.
Which is, I think, great because, you know, who's the at this point, you know, the fairy prince, you know? But the Gump, and who's the vilest of all goblins, but Blix. So, of course they would have similar voices.
Yeah.
Mm. Interesting thought there.
Yeah, so a lot of dubbing in this movie, and that's why I was... In the commentary, he does say that is Alice, what's her name?
Clayton.
Alice Clayton's voice, doing Gump, but he doesn't say if it's her voice doing the character that she's portraying.
No, that's definitely Alice Clayton also doing Blix.
Okay. Yeah, I wonder if Robert Picardo is doing the voice of Meg.
Oh, I'm sure.
I could believe that it is, but I don't know.
I just don't know who they chose to dub in for Tina Martin.
Who's that?
The lady who played Nell, who was like, you know, be a proper lady.
Oh, yeah, it might have been her voice, but just badly dubbed.
That could be, I guess.
I don't know.
Who's the ADR person here? I'm going to give them a slap.
They really need it, because this is, I mean, the dubbing on this is kind of
noticeable. So why did they have to dub so much of it? I'm not understanding this. Like, when you make a movie, you're getting...
Well, again, some of it depends on how it tested, how original voices tested, but also what was available from sound when it was recorded, and what would be recorded in an ADR, according to the director.
Mm-hmm.
So
in almost every movie, they have to go back and loop or redub their lines.
Right, that's the ADR, right. ADR part of it. So,
you know, because of Singing in the Rain, that there are lots of problems with recording sound and filming movies.
Yes.
Right, I just thought by 85, yeah. So that's one of my favorite movies. So
I don't blame you. It's a great movie.
Especially, you know, about talking pictures and musicals. But anyway, back to Labyrinth. I mean, wait, no. Back to Legend.
There was a giveaway. There was a giveaway.
Our next movie
is going to be.
Because I changed my pick, and I guess I was...
Save it for later, Sharon.
I was already comparing the two in my head. I'm sorry, but I'll wait till the next one. Okay, can I admit to the listening audience that I did fall asleep during Legend, and I feel really bad that
I don't think you should feel bad. I think it's a boring movie. I don't think it's great.
Again, it's a mediocre movie at best.
I know, but people worked really hard on this movie, and what if somebody that worked on this movie is, like, listening to our little podcast, and then they hear that I fell asleep?
Ridley Scott will come to your house.
I know.
Slap your face.
He will just fall down and cry at your feet.
I never fell asleep when Tim Curry.
You
was,
made Ridley cry.
Oh,
you
my
made
God.
Ridley, you bastard.
It really was hard to see it as a blind person. So I guess.
Not just that, but again, it's a mediocre film. It's not like super fantastical.
So yeah. In 2003,
it's a Cage. You know, it's essentially a Cage movie.
It is really bottled up and tiny. It is the scale is not big enough for it to support the story it wants to tell, and I think that's the biggest problem with it.
I agree. That's
so, in 2003, Ridley Scott was knighted for his contribution to film, and then somebody mentioned Legend, and they took it away.
No, they did not. That's such a lie.
They didn't.
You're a horrible person for saying that. If anything, they would have taken it away for G.I. Jane.
I'll go along with that too.
Wait, is that like G.I. Joe, but it's G.I. Joe?
It was Demi Moore movie that came out.
Oh, I never saw that.
Where she was the first woman to be inducted into the Navy SEALs.
And that movie was right before Gladiator, which is hugely successful and widely acclaimed.
So they can't all be diamonds, is what it comes down to.
Yeah.
Oh, White Squall, what a painful picture that was.
I did not see it.
There's a scene in it where I believe it's Jeff Bridges' love interest.
Mm-hmm.
The boat is sinking, and the room, and I think it's the galley, the door is trapped, and she's looking at him through the porthole, and she just gives him the look that says, "Go away, save yourself."
Uh-huh.
And she swims away from the door. And it's like, I am absolutely gutted at this moment in time.
Wow.
So
it affected
anyway,
deeply.
It was just one of those things where, it was just, okay. I actually started to tear up. I was like, no. He saves her. Get the hell back in there and save her. Don't you dare swim away.
I thought you were saying it was a bad movie.
So, gentlemen, brothers.
But it's a good one.
Yes. I just want to say, brothers, there was, I liked the parts, I told you I liked the parts with Tim Curry, but also the parts where she's goes into the room where she finds the jewelry and the dress and all of that. And I thought it was interesting what they were saying about the rooms of where darkness lives and the details of how the huge fireplace and how it kind of really looked dark and authentic and even down to painting the food. And we were talking about that earlier, you know, before we started recording that, you know, they had to make it like evil looking food. So they actually somehow painted the food.
Made it look really, really super dark and very, very shiny.
Like it was like a different, and I like that they made it look.
Yeah, and Ridley Scott points out one set of crystal drinkware on the table. He says, "I still have that in my house, by the way." So
that just goes to show you that as a director, you can get away with a lot of stuff.
Right. And
including letting the props department know, no, I don't know what happened to these.
Right. It also shows you that the commentary is better than the film itself.
Yeah.
So we're advising people to watch the commentary.
Watch the commentary. Skip the film. Just watch the commentary.
Just watch the commentary.
Because, honestly, there is a lot of really interesting stuff about the making of this movie.
Yeah.
And the movie is just not deserving of it.
Mm. Again, if we'd seen the whole 150 minutes, I feel like there could have been more.
It's possible.
But I agree with you the fact that it's in a bottle. You're looking at everything in a bottle.
Mm-hmm. Well, also,
it just needs to be. It needs
maybe,
to be.
Maybe
brand-
it, you guys have to remember that we're looking at this in 2016, and maybe, I mean, you said, Pete, that you enjoyed the experience in the theater.
Yeah, but that was because of my company more than the movie.
Oh, I see.
Big part of me enjoying the film was the fact that there was this whole kind of flirting scene between Lily and Jack, and then there was this sort of flirting thing between me and Melissa, so it was all working out very well for me.
Yes. But, I mean, maybe that's what this movie is for, is, like, you take your kids, and or you take your date, and you go to the theater, and there's this, like, beautiful setting, fairy tale scene, and you hold hands with your 15-year-old girlfriend, and you know we're
you have to realize
older.
You realize I was 17 by this point, so
okay,
this
you know,
my senior year in high school.
Okay,
you were dating a 15-year-old?
No, let's
she
not.
She was saying 15. I was dating a 17-year-old.
I was just throwing out numbers, but
yes.
So I just want people to keep in mind that you know we're. More mature folks now, and we're, you know, mid-40s, and so, you
but
know,
but a lot of the stuff we're saying is timeless, and it's,
yeah,
and it's
I agree.
Critique.
I disagree with your apologism of this.
I know.
Yeah,
I
think 31 years have passed, and suddenly we're so cynical. It's the fact that we happen to know movies better, you know, and for, Chris brought up, for what it's worth, the makeup and the prosthetics, and the set design pre-CGI is phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous. It's an amazing-looking film.
Yeah.
But that's really as far as you can go with that, because the story is very mediocre.
Yeah. I mean, I'm, it's not that I'm disagreeing with you either, Pete. Mm-hmm. I'm just, I like to make excuses for people because, you know, kindergarten teachers would do that, and we're like, you know, well, you know, maybe that child had a bad day, or they didn't eat breakfast, or, their pants were too tight, or...
So what you're saying is Ridley Scott made a bad movie because he didn't have breakfast.
And his pants were really tight. Which is a huge surprise, because back in the 80s, puffy pants were the thing.
I know.
Right?
I actually wore harem pants, but I'm thinking that maybe he concentrated too much on the visual, and he said, I'm making art here.
I could make art.
Which could be. I mean, because like I said, not all of Ridley Scott's films are diamonds, but they all look great.
Yeah.
So
this directorial decision kind of bothered me. This is what the unicorns sound like right here.
So clearly the unicorns became narwhals.
No, they speak whale.
They speak dolphin. Yeah,
right.
Wasn't it dolphin that they?
No, that's I think that's humpback whale sound.
Oh, did they? Yeah.
I can't remember from the commentary if they said dolphin or whale, but
I think he said whale.
But here is my thing: if you're going to criticize something, then you have to come up with a sound that would be more realistic, and I don't know if I can come up with one, except
really pronounced makes it sound like this.
Everybody knows that unicorns
that
sound like...
That was Eeyore from Rudolph. You know, Rudolph Takes the Baby New Year. But, I mean, I would have liked maybe a horse sound, but...
It's not Eeyore, it's Eon.
Eeyore is from Winnie the Pooh. I'm sorry. I lose kindergarten teacher points there. It's been a week, guys. Okay.
I understand.
I wish I lived in a magical forest right now, and and if Tim Curry stole me, I think I would turn to the dark side. But
yeah.
But wait, I think
wait,
maybe
Curry.
Well, my kindergarten teacher taught me if you don't have something nice to say, don't say anything else, you know, at all. But I think if the unicorns could have been like a horse sound but tweaked, that would have worked better for me.
Better than whales.
Better than whales. Yes. Like, I don't know who
the decision that was. Unicorns became narwhals because that's what the sound they make is.
Yeah, I didn't. So do we at least agree on that all three of us didn't like that?
Okay. Oh, my God, that was terrible.
That was, you know.
That was just bad.
And plus, I think a guy director should have gone to a woman who loves unicorns and said, hey, what sound should we use? And any woman would have told him, horses. Use horses, but maybe, you know, with like a little tinkly bell or make the horse sound like a little magical. Right. That worked better because their horses were born.
Like this. Makes as much sense as a whale.
Okay, no. I don't
care. Screaming baby goat.
So, Chris, do you have that clip about brothers? Because
I have.
We have
to.
Oh,
yeah.
You can never defeat me. We are brothers. Eternal.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, every time he speaks, I'm just like, wow. If the movie
because
could have
as you know,
been him.
I just want to remind you.
Yes.
We are brothers!
All right, inside joke there, because you and Pete are brothers. Okay, guys, they're not really brothers, but they act like brothers. They finish each other's sandwiches.
Brothers.
That's what I was going to say.
Okay.
All right, so here's the part at the end where he's like, this is how the show is good. This is how the movie's going to end.
I require the solace of the shadows and the dark of the night. Sunshine is my destroyer.
Blah. In case you didn't know how this was going.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
I gotta tell you that the solace of the night.
Yeah.
It was really sexy. You're really like, the solace of the night. Yes, yeah. Yes, give me the solace of the night. Yes.
Yes.
You the man, and I'm falling for you even now.
I'd go with him. I'm just saying. No, I mean, I'm married, so no, I wouldn't. Chris, I'm sorry, my husband's listening to this. So
your husband's not only listening to this.
Well.
He's also commenting.
I have to listen to his little crush on, you know, the one from the lady that's in Iron Man movies. She plays Natasha, but what's her?
Scarlett. ScarJo, baby.
Yeah, Scarlett Johansson. Like, I'm so sick of hearing about Scarlett Johansson eating strawberries. Like, he would watch her for 2 hours.
So, like, I had a better idea for, like, how Iron Man, what was it, 2?
2.
Yeah, I think Iron Man 2, I had a completely different ending for the movie.
Okay.
Like, you know that scene where she comes in with the strawberries, where, you know, he comes in with the strawberries and, you know, Pepper can't have them.
Right, tries to get him to...
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And then, like, everybody leaves the office.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, my ending diverges here from the rest of the movie,
okay.
Right? Okay, so, like, in my version of the movie, like, for the next 75 minutes, we watch Scarlett Johansson eat the strawberries.
Boring. Okay.
I am getting my money's worth out of that movie.
I totally understand. That's,
I would
that's
walk away happy.
Completely up my alley.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Okay, Scarlett Johansson eats the strawberries for 40 minutes, and then there's a 10-minute fight scene. That resolves everything.
I
need the fight scene. There has to be something spectacular to snap me out of my fugue.
All right.
Because other than I'm going to walk out of the theater just completely replaying that 40 minutes over and over again in my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I'll be satisfied with another, you know, Marvel movie. So
back to Labyrinth.
Yeah.
Again.
That giveaway again.
Did I do it again?
Holy cow.
I mean, legend. Oh, my God. Okay, I'm really not doing that purposely. I want people to know that.
I think this is the reason I actually chose this movie was so that you would constantly call it Labyrinth.
I am so very, very sorry. I apologize. They both start with L.
They do. I can't argue with you there.
They both came out in the mid-80s.
Don't know why I keep doing that.
I think they both came out in 85, didn't they?
No, I thought Labyrinth was 86 or 87.
You're probably... In fact, it is 86 because it's a 30th year anniversary this year.
I hope you know I'm not doing that purposely.
Thank you very much.
That wasn't a joke. I just keep making
the mistake. Intelligent films trumps Chris's. I mean...
So, Chris, is it time to rate
I've
this movie?
I've found my true mate.
That's you, Sharon.
Your true mate?
Yes.
Or you mean Tim Curry is my true mate?
No, you. Oh. It's you.
Wow.
I've found my true mate. And you know it.
You know it, baby.
Oh.
You know it.
Oh, you know it.
Yeah. Are you going to pee now?
No, how old is he?
Who, Tim Curry?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I don't know.
He was born at 49, so three.
That makes him
shy of 70?
67?
Yeah.
I love that voice when he's like, you know, he'll just say something and go,
no, he's 70. He's born in
47. No, come on.
But, like, he magically becomes unavailable to you at 70? What?
What? No, I mean, look, if he knocked on the door, I would have a drink with him. I really would.
Oh, yeah, 46.
Yeah. If he said, Sharon Dudley, you know, kindergarten teacher, you and me, pina coladas, I'd go, okay.
Except he wouldn't say it like that.
No, he'd say,
you and me, pina coladas. Do you like pina coladas and getting caught in the rain?
I found my cocktail, and you know it.
Oh, my God.
Pina coladas for everyone.
That song is annoying.
Vix, are you not the greatest bartender of all my goblins?
That song just annoys me.
Who's the man here?
Oh,
you know what I'm saying.
But anyway.
Yeah, he's the man, and that's the problem.
That's what she said. Okay, can we rate this movie? It's
I think we should.
It's time to.
Oh, it's time to rate this movie.
Yes.
So there's so much more to say, but I think it is time.
There's so much more.
No, I don't think there's so much more to say. I think we pretty much smacked it around the way that it needed to be.
Go ahead. Pick me. I'll go first.
All right, Sharon. Pete, you better ask me.
Okay. Sharon.
Yes.
On a scale from 1 to 5 gold pieces, how would you rate Legend?
I would. Wait, is that the right name of it? Yes.
Wait, I thought we were watching Labyrinth.
No, Legend.
Oh, my God. I watched the wrong movie for this one.
I would give it 5 gold pieces. No, I'm completely lying. No, I gave the wrong answer. If it was just Tim Curry, I would give it 5 gold pieces. But
no,
I'm
please, come on.
2.5.
Really?
Yeah.
Chris.
Okay. Yeah.
On a scale from 1 to 5 gold pieces, how would you rate Legend?
I will give it 1 gold piece and 9 silver pieces.
Wow.
In other words, just shy of 1 Excalibur.
Well, Pete, now I'm curious, because you're saying, wow, are we too high?
No. Actually, on a scale from 1 to 5 gold pieces, I personally am rating Legends at 2, a solid 2.
Oh, well, I did 2.5, right?
No, you did 2.9. Did you do 2.5?
No, I did 1.9.
I did.
She said 2.5.
Yeah, 2.5.
Okay. So I'm giving it a solid 2.
I mean, I would give it 2, but it's just not quite as good as Excalibur.
Oh,
That's true.
I gave Excalibur, what, 4?
I think you gave it 5.
No, I think I gave it 5.
I think I should.
Because you're somehow deluded. Into
now I have to go back.
Well, once again, your wrongness has managed to completely pervade this moment.
So, okay, I keep wanting to backtrack on Excalibur because I keep thinking of the great moments in Excalibur, but then I keep going, oh, but that last third, it just goes to shit.
It's like looking at the future. You never know what's inside until you take a bite.
Yeah, that's great. That's fantastic. Except you still have another third of that movie that is terrible.
I don't care!
Yeah.
You just love mocking, you know, one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, imagine, like, in Star Wars, right? If, like, there was that great, you know, beginning of the movie until they get off, you know, Tatooine, and, you know, and there's that great middle of the movie where they escape from the Death Star, and then, like, in the end of the movie, they dress up in latex and slap each other with fish.
In many ways, that would have been a better ending.
I love Star Wars, too, but that line when he goes, oh, I wanted to go to Tashi Station and pick up the power converters. I mean, I don't know. That,
so shall I call the medical droid for you? Because obviously you're in pain.
You know, that whiny part kind of, you know.
It's not just that. It's the whole trench run, too, over and over. Well, I fired it, but I missed. Yeah, well, of course you missed, because you're not the hero, jackass.
Well, that was taken from Dam Busters. So.
Sharon, it's your choice. What is our next movie?
Well, I think I've made it completely obvious during this podcast that it's Labyrinth.
Sweeney Todd.
Wow, Labyrinth. Hey, just in time for the 30-year anniversary.
I bet no one had a clue that our next movie was going to be Labyrinth.
That timing is amazing. How did you do that?
I don't know. Psychic or something?
I guess.
I don't.
It's like you've got a fifth sense or something.
No, it's because I was listening to some David Bowie in the car, and I just started thinking, you know, I really like that movie, and I think, you know, we've done some okay fantasy movies, and I want to do one that I really, really like a lot, and so that's why. That's why I picked Labyrinth. I hope that I don't reverse the names when we do Labyrinth. I hope I don't keep calling it Legend.
That would be hilarious.
I bet you will. I bet it'll happen at least once.
You know, hey guys, it's the beginning of kindergarten, and the kids are like, you know.
I know, we all had to go through it once.
Well, I've gone through it like more than 20 years. I've been in kindergarten. I just want to graduate soon.
Just stop eating the paste. Stop hitting the other kids.
Oh my God.
And if you see that tasty, tasty paint chip, don't swallow it.
Yeah. So how can they get a hold of you, Mr. Chris Dudley?
Well, they can get a hold of the show by emailing dragonreelpodcast@gmail.com, or perhaps they could find us on social media by going to facebook.com/dragonreel. Or, Pete, isn't there a Twitter we have?
Why, yes. Yes, there is.
Can you say what it is, Pete?
At dragonreel.
Yes, it is. Yeah, I'm so proud of you. You got that one right this time. So that will do it for our discussion of the 1985 epic fantasy film Legend, directed by Ridley Scott. And until next time, when we will be discussing Labyrinth, have fun storming the castle?